Hey, Los Angeles. Are you looking for unique 4th of July plans for you and your friends or family? LA's greatest rivalry returns to Rose Bowl Stadium for a July 4th edition of the El Tráfico soccer matchup as the LA Galaxy return to their original home to defend their turf against LAFC. Last year, a record crowd of over 82,000 fans were on hand to witness the Galaxy victory. That's July 4th at Rose Bowl Stadium. Guaranteed fireworks both on and off the field and a celebration for all of LA. LA Galaxy versus LAFC, the Rose Bowl edition. Tickets at lagalaxy.com/tickets.
Welcome back to Now. No opportunity wasted. I'm your host, Angelica Ross. Today is Monday, April 22nd, and we're going to get things kicked off with a word from Buddhism Day by Day, Wisdom for a Modern Life by Daisaku Ikeda. He says, quote, "Do not compare yourselves to others. Be true to who you are and continue to learn with all your might. Even if you are ridiculed, even if you suffer disappointments and setbacks, continue to advance and do not be defeated," end quote. That is a concept within our Buddhist community that we basically talk about a lot. and I have clung to this concept of never giving up for 13 years now. I have a t-shirt, I got the hat, I got all kind of SGI paraphernalia with the words "never give up" printed on them. And to remind me that that's the only thing that I cannot do is give up. Now, if this is your first episode tuning in, I have tried to start being more transparent about what's also going on with me right now. And not just talking about what's going on in our world, but actually sharing with you what my experience is like on my journey to discovering the depths of my faith and becoming more and more obedient to the call on my life and the vow that I took as a bodhisattva who emerged from the earth like a lotus flower, traversing through the murkiest, muddy waters to break through to the surface, unsullied by the environment in which I grew from. And that journey won't always be easy or fun, but it is the path that we embark on where we meet ourselves on the other side of challenge. This is why I want to call all of our listeners, fans, friends, and family, everybody, winners. You are all winners. You can all become winners, even if you don't feel like one right now. I truly believe in everyone's ability to create a shift in their lives, that even in the midst of tragedy and the sounds of bombs bursting in air, that we can still dance and choose joy as much as possible. My heart and prayers go out to the children in Gaza who were playing in a playground and were unexpectedly taken from this earth due to an Israeli airstrike. And right now, Israel is saying they're looking into it. But we all know what's been going on, and we all know what they're continuing to try to do, which is erase the future for all Palestinians. But I believe in a future where Palestine will be free. I believe in restorative justice. I believe that we must come together and take responsibility for what's going on, which just means the ability to respond. Like, what's your response? Right now, America is being complicit in the genocide. That's been our country's response, but we don't have to align with our government. I am so blessed to have had this spiritual practice for the past 13 years that has helped me to understand what kind of comes along with the path that I have consciously chosen. In Buddhism, we have a concept of suffering consciously. It's an understanding that no matter who you are, you cannot go from birth to death and not experience suffering and loss and grief. The more we understand these things as facts of life, the less we are shaken by times of turmoil. My Buddhist friend and fellow acting colleague Alex Balling texted me the other day with a link to an article discussing the Buddhist concept of the eight winds, like Nymphia Wind from RuPaul's Drag Race, which congratulations, Nymphia Wind. I was definitely rooting for you. But no, the eight winds is a concept, which I want to share with you a passage from the writings of Nichiren Daishonin, a 12th century priest who was exiled because of his unwavering commitment to the Lotus Sutra and being unwilling to give into corrupt religious and government agendas. Nichiren says, quote, "Worthy, wise persons deserve to be called so because they are not carried away by the eight winds, prosperity, decline, disgrace, honor, praise, censure, suffering, and pleasure. They are neither elated by prosperity nor grieved by the decline. Heavenly gods will surely protect one who is unbending before the eight winds." So thank you so much, Alex. He sent me his text saying you're so strong and knows that I am trying as much as possible to be unbending in the face of so many challenges. Alex, you've continued to support me in what's been a very unconventional path to becoming the type of leader that my Buddhist mentors have encouraged me to become. The late Daisaku Ikeda encouraged us to become respected people in society who can talk to anyone while valuing and reflecting their dignity and respect that's available in all life. To become a leader who can not just inspire members of their own community, but also motivate the world to move towards peace. I have vowed to dedicate myself to becoming a leader who is focused on world peace. So hopefully in 2026, Georgia voters will vote me into office and put me into position to make sure that the people remain in power over our own lives. I spoke to Georgia State Senator Kim Jackson about the political landscape and got some advice on running for office. Take a listen. I love your red glasses. Come on, fashion.
Thank you.
It is so nice to meet you. I've heard so much about you because I think we have a mutual acquaintance in Courtney Snowden.
Yes.
Yes. They worked on your campaign, right?
Back a long time ago now, almost. But yes.
Yes, a long time ago. And, you know, I actually got a chance to meet Courtney when I went to the Victory Institute's training for, because, you know, I'm starting to see my path into public office. And, you know, I sort of am making my transition from Hollywood. I've been a grassroots organizer and a sort of a community leader in that space. But now I'm seeing, you know, as I'm an adult now, you know, I guess I'm fully grown up, that I can actually participate and help lead the system. And, you know, the fact that I can see myself in the system is because of folks like yourself, who, you know, are winning races with like 82% of the vote. So can you talk to me a little bit about the challenge? Because this podcast, before I get there, the first question I always ask folks is just, how are you doing right now?
Yeah, no, I'm doing well. Thanks for giving me a moment to eat some lunch. That helps me be much better. I'm a lot less hangry when I have food.
So yes.
All is good. And yeah, I'm doing really well.
Great. And so, like I was saying, you have been able to accomplish quite a feat as a Black, openly queer, ordained person of faith, you know, to get 82% of the vote and have all the intersections of who you are show up in your race. Talk to me a little bit about the challenge of getting from the start to garnering 80% of people's confidence.
Yeah, I mean, so I think a lot of it started with believing that it was possible. And for us, I wasn't sure that it was really possible until we actually paid some money to do a poll in my district. The district that I represent in Georgia, like, it's super diverse. Every major faith is represented. Over 90 languages are spoken. There are a whole lot of reasons why me as a queer woman may not, go so well in my district. And so we did. We literally paid to have a poll conducted in my district where we asked the question outright: how would you feel about a queer woman representing you? I think we use the word lesbian. How would you feel about a lesbian who's married to a Muslim, representing you? How would you feel about an ordained person running to represent you? And so, I mean, I just had to get some real numbers. And when the numbers came back and showed that people weren't put off by those facts, I was able to kind of go full steam ahead with the support of a lot of really great people who believed in me and believed in the things that I was really promoting and pushing for.
Now, so I have grown to learn and understand that the personal is political, and so many people have kind of been refraining from participating in some of these conversations because, oh, I don't talk politics, but the personal is political. So talk to me about what politicized you growing up here in America.
That's a really good question. I think that I'm not sure that there was a moment of politicization really. I grew up in the Black church. I feel like the Black church, at least the Black church I grew up in, has always been involved in government in some way, right? In fighting for justice. And so, I remember like the school board was run by like a deacon at my church. And so I don't remember waking up one day and being like, oh, I want to be political per se. Like, it really was just a part of the ethos in some ways. But then I think going from political to actually wanting to run for office, those are two different things, right? So like, I've been doing justice work for a long time. Even in college, I remember going on marches with Jesse Jackson down the streets of Greenville, South Carolina. I'm not that old. He was an old Jesse Jackson, I want to be clear.
No, I get you. Listen, I get, listen, I think you and I are about the, we in the same age range, so I totally understand.
So not the 60s, Jesse.
No,
Right.
no.
But I did have a moment when I was in I guess early high school, late middle school, where I went to a city council meeting and we'd elected our first Black mayor. So like, representation matters, right? You seeing somebody reflected back to you really matters. And so seeing our first Black mayor sitting up there on a dais, and they were discussing in my hometown which roads they wanted to pave for the first time. And I was like, I'm a little Black girl who rides a school bus. I know whose neighborhoods have ro roads that are paved and who don't. And I was really clear about the racial dynamics there. And so to hear them discussing that, and this Black man helping to lead the conversation to make sure that Black neighborhoods got their roads paved, I mean, I think that was for me the defining moment of, oh, it's not just I want to march. It's not just that I want to like be involved in politics. I actually want to run for office, because running for office and serving in office is how you make like real concrete change.
Wow. We are very grateful for folks like you who have that realization. I, similarly have had a re realization in the sense that I don't believe and invest so much in our difference as I do in the ways in which we are the same. And some of those ways that I think about is just in our human responsibility. And that it really, yes, some of us are more capable than others in various ways with various things. But I don't think it's on some and not on others to take some kind of responsibility for the world that we're living in, whether that is voting or whether that is taking office or whether that is volunteering and working with nonprofit organizations or whatever that might be. But I'm an actor, I'm a creative, and the reality is too, spiritually speaking, as the way that I see it, I think all people are, but we don't allow ourselves the space to develop the kind of confidence in and freedom in being creative, but to not understand that life itself is a creative pursuit. And so I give way to the fact that my next, I guess, creative pursuit is running for office, because there's no way that my spirit would allow me to rest on my privileges and laurels and rest in a space of my own now gained privilege when I know where I come from, I know what the real issues are. And I've been lockstep in this movement to say that as I gain position and power, I will use that for my people and for community. So how do you see this moment as someone who has felt called to run in office and be into office? When you bring your black lens, when you bring your spiritual lens, when you bring your queer lens to looking at the issues, what do you see are the most important issues right now for folks here in Georgia?
It's interesting because I only have my lens. I don't necessarily know that it's, I don't know where it's different than other people's lenses, right? Because I only know my lens, right? And I'll say, like, for me, recognizing people's need for healthcare, for opportunities to work and be able to feed their families, and the opportunities to have a place to stay, and opportunities for education for their kids, like, those are kind of the core fundamental basics that a lot of people aren't able to meet right now and able to access. I can't tell you how many Georgians come up to the Capitol every day to just talk about like rent and how it's becoming unaffordable. I work in my day job. I work with people who are experiencing homelessness, people who are sleeping on the streets right now today, some of whom have jobs. Like, let's be clear, they actually are working, but they cannot afford rent. Or they can't get approved for rent because they have an eviction in their past. And so there's all.
Or that you have to make like so much more now than
Yes.
what your, I guess, the requirements to get a place is. And you know, again, with things being what they are, that's super hard.
Yeah. And like people are asking for 2 or 3 months rent in advance. You know, it used to be a security deposit was like $500 or whatever, right? Now it's huge number amount of money, and you're having to pay application fees for rent. Like it's just a really difficult process to even just get the basic need of housing. So when you add complications of housing, then not having access to healthcare, and then not having access to good education for your children on top of it's hard to find hope. And I feel like a core fundamental need for Georgians is for us to infuse opportunities for people to have hope, for them to really believe that tomorrow can be a brighter and better day than today was if they're living in the midst of like chronic stress, right? Like that is something I think is really important. And it's something that we really struggle to do with our governmental structure currently in Georgia.
I mean, there's so I just got back because I bought my house in 2020, and I just got back in October of last year, and have just tried to get on the ground and put my ear on the ground to hear what's going on. You know, hearing you speak about the issues that are most important for us here in Georgia, you know, I think about the fact that I guess we still haven't had Medicaid expanded here, and things like that. But one thing I did not hear you mention was policing. And the reason why and I'm glad that you didn't, but number one, for just me personally. But as far as what is the concern of the people here is top priorities, where do you see the priority in Cop City?
Yeah, I don't think it's a priority for folks, right? I don't think that people are overwhelmingly so. People who are middle class and who have their basic needs met, then they're able to look towards the next level of like, okay, how do we ensure safety and security or whatever? But for so many folks, their basic needs aren't met, so they're not thinking about Cop City. They're not thinking about policing. They're thinking about how do I make sure that I have healthcare? How do I make sure that I have food that I can put on a table and I have a table in a house that is mine, right? That's where folks' energy is. And, you know, I get the importance of public safety. People have a right, deserve to be able to be safe in wherever they are in their communities. That's important. But, you know, do I believe that billions of dollars should be spent in creating more and more policing and building more and more prisons and jails? actually don't, I don't think that's where people's hearts are. Do we need a way to make sure that we're safe and secure? 100%. But if you ask the average Georgian where they would rather see their funds spent, I think most of them would say they would rather have their money spent in meeting some of these basic needs of health, food, and wellness.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, money spent, like, you know, you're talking about people wanting access to healthcare and things like that. And yet we haven't expanded Medicaid, but Brian Kemp approved, I believe, $10 million to go to a war that most of us are still in a space. Not most of us, I should say, because I think gratefully, I'm so grateful that we are removing ourselves from this place of thinking that it's too complicated for us to enter into the conversation, and realizing many things that appear complicated are not complicated. They're just corrupt, as our friend Marianne Williamson would say. And so to see these dollars go to that and to make the connection in ways in which our police are trained or have, you know, connection to these things, how do we continue to get the voters here in Georgia to understand that, because I think I see a lot of people when the genocide is happening in Gaza. I've been a part of PSL Atlanta's protests against that. And, you know, a lot of times we're like, well, what does that have to do over there, you know, with us here? And yet 10 million of our tax dollars just went to support, you know, sort of that war and understanding that. So when we want to, as the people, to speak up and have our word heard, whether it is against our tax dollars being sent to war or whether that is our tax dollars being sent to policing, we now have had a passing of SB 63, I believe it was, that expands the list of offenses that are no longer eligible for bail, which include protesting and include organizations who understand what's up that tried to mitigate the experiences here by bailing folks out are no longer able to bail out more than three folks. This to me seems like a clear move to suppression of the people being able to have a say.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that there's an important distinction. So it's not that these are not bail eligible, it's that they are only bail eligible. So it used to be that if you, let's say you got arrested for criminal trespass, which is a not uncommon thing that folks who are protesting get arrested for, actually, then you could sign yourself out on your own recognizance, essentially. It would be a judicial release is the term that we would use, where there's no cash bail required, no money required to be put up. Now, with the passing of SB 63, you have to put up money. And to your point, the bail funds that we've relied on, that protest movements have worked really hard to create, to fund, and really have depended upon in terms of getting folks out of jail really quickly, those bail funds have now been rendered essentially illegal. You can bail out three people a year in any jurisdiction across the state. So with only three people, you can't have a bail fund, right? Like,
right. And it doesn't really support the movement if a bunch of people end up getting arrested.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and typically when we do mass protests and there's, you know, significant arrest, it's more than three people. And it's certainly going to be more than three people in the span of a year. And, you know, the thing that somebody raised for me that was even more atrocious is that it's not just about protesters or bail funds. It's also just a regular family member, right? So like if I had four children who got arrested all together in a car, I'm gonna have to pick the three that I love the most. I guess I don't know.
Right.
That's how the law works when you're trying to like stick it to one entity, which is bail funds. You end up hurting masses of people, right? There are these unintended consequences. And so even just regular family members, I talk about this from a church perspective. My church, we bail out people on a regular basis for very minor offenses that folks who are experiencing homelessness often get caught up, obstruction, criminal trespass, like those are not uncommon things for them to be arrested for. And, you know, now I'm limited to three people. So I don't know how I make that decision of what three I'm going to bail out. But And so it is. It's purposely, I think, moving us more towards a state in which folks who are innocent or who certainly have not been proven guilty will have to sit in jail longer. And it's so ironic because people are like, our jails are overcrowded and people are dying in jails. So you would think we would pass legislation that would help to alleviate that overcrowding, but instead we pass legislation that enhances it, that makes it even greater.
What is, let's connect this to a greater conversation as well, because I want to know where do you, with that being said, where does Georgia fit into the conversation where we're at, where the world is start, where Americans are starting to understand that slavery never ended and that legalized slavery has been basically converted to the prison industrial complex.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Complex, and there are certain sort of capitalistic structures that benefit from prison labor. Where do we fit into that
Yeah,
conversation?
I mean, Georgia is a part of that. I mean, every license tag that you all get, if you have a license tag on your car,
But is it more than
oh
license? Because
yeah. Oh yeah, no, it's
I was speaking to Bruce Franks Jr., who was a former House representative in St. Louis, Missouri, and he was saying that he when he got his into office, his chair, the de like it was certain furniture they have like a catalog they can order from, and it's and this furniture is made by people in prison, and it might cost $700, but the person making it ain't getting nowhere near
Oh
that.
yeah, no, I was just starting with license tags. Like that's where we're all like many of us are complicit in it because most of us have license tags. So it's license tags. It is office furniture and government buildings. The entire governor's suite was re-outfitted by furniture that was made by people who were incarcerated. If you go to a state park, and you like to barbecue on those barbecue pits that are provided in the state park, chances are those were made by somebody who was in a welding program in a state prison. The list goes on and on. Eyeglasses that people who are incarcerated wear, they're made by other prisoners. Their uniforms, I mean, it is a long list of incarcerated labor that goes into making these products. And yes, we too have a catalog that you can buy things in Georgia. Like right now, you can go if you want to get a picnic bench or a metal table, and you can get that. And that is made by people who are incarcerated. Our cards that we this is not true for me. I have my cards made other places, but the vast majority of legislators, the cards that they hand out that have the Georgia seal on it and have their information, that's made by people who are incarcerated. It runs the
And
gamut.
and it's kind of, I mean, again, I understand, but I have had to push myself as someone who has had to fear for my life as a black trans woman. But somehow I've developed more trust in the streets than I do in the police. And so I have been pushed to evolve into this space of entertaining abolition. And as I entertain the idea of abolition, the first steps that I'm told are just imagining a world in a community, in an environment without the need of policing, just to imagine what that would look and feel like for us. And I feel like our imagination is leaning more towards policing to create a campus for all the ways that we can develop new tactics and things to police people instead of developing a campus of how we can be a more, how we can respond more to mental health challenges, to the homeless, to all these things that give us these overcrowding, even to the fact of, and can you explain to me, speaking of this, like overcrowding of minor offenses and all these different things, can you explain to me where we are across the state when it comes to the legalization of marijuana?
We are nowhere. So there are individual municipalities, individual cities that have taken some action to essentially decriminalize marijuana. I'll shout out my own Clarkston, which is in my backyard. City of Clarkston has made it a $25 fine. It's not criminalized at all. Wow. If you are caught in possession of small amounts of marijuana. But statewide, no, like we are still very much a police state. Our laws around marijuana are actually more stringent than Texas, which, I mean, wow. Generally when I think about, like, you know, a real big red state with really big guns, it's Texas. Tough on crime, I think of Texas. Our drug laws in particular are much more harsh than even the state of Texas. And I think we're a long ways. The only way we're going to get there is, you know, medical marijuana might start moving us there because we do see the revenue potential, right? There's great revenue possibility in medical marijuana. Georgia, the number one business that we have in Georgia is agriculture. And so for farmers who are looking for another market, right? Hemp has been kind of like a little step, soft step into it. I do see marijuana, medical marijuana as being kind of the next step. So, but we're still a long ways away.
You say we're still a long ways away. And this is where I come in. And this is where this is one of the issues. I am very intersectional and I could talk to you about women's issues, women's rights and having autonomy, just as well as trans people having autonomy of our bodies. But when it comes to this issue, I feel so strongly about the dichotomy of the state being willing to capitalize on Black bodies through slave labor in the prisons, but not being willing to capitalize off better options that have a restorative justice element to it. And for me, like, I want to, and I know that folks like Tony Michelle with SNAPCO and other folks who have been working on this decrim of marijuana, coming from Hollywood, I have had such an experience that's such a mind screw where I see people with money and privilege being able to have a completely different experience than those who do not, obviously across racial lines and whatever. But when it comes to that class line, we have in Hollywood, they have dispensaries that look like Apple stores. Yeah. There are, and in Hollywood, you know, you're not getting arrested for marijuana possession. Now, I've heard there's a place called Black Hollywood. I heard it's a place called Black Hollywood. And I heard it's in Georgia. But in Black Hollywood, there are no dispensaries that look like Apple stores. In Black Hollywood, if you don't got the right address or privilege status, or don't live in the right county, you can still get a fine, like you say, or still have some sort of repercussions for engaging. Now, what I know is that our pursuit of the American dream has been conflated, our pursuit of liberation and being free from, like, with our ancestors, has been conflated with the capitalistic understanding of what it means for us to have 40 acres and a mule, what was promised to us so long ago. And yet we have actors and musicians and rappers and CEOs who have been able to get a piece of that American dream and to get their 40 acres, because baby, you get into a certain county or whatever, and here in Georgia, you can get you a nice piece of house and land for not too much. And so I feel like folks have packed up and kind of retreated into their comforts, into their gated communities, into their certain things where we're still not there. And as you say, we still have a distance to go. And yet here we are with all this privilege and power as celebrities. I'm going to be calling on us to leverage our celebrity and power to join forces with the restorative justice movement. And hopefully we have folks like yourself on the inside that when it's time to like draft bills and do certain things, that I know you kind of understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it's important to know, I don't care if you're the CEO or if you are the most well-known actor in Black Hollywood or Hollywood, you get caught with drugs in Georgia, you going to jail. Like, that's just, especially if you're Black.
Is that the case? Because I just remember seeing an incident in Atlanta where there was some rioting going on, I think over some police brutality or something that was going on. And I remember seeing Keisha Lance Bottoms on TV going off. She was like, now y'all tearing up this city. And Mike, Killer Mike
came on. Yep.
Owns a lot of, and Killer Mike came on. And my first thought to myself was check his pockets. My first thought was, what are we talking about here? Meaning, like, I understand, you know, but what I'm saying is the laws and the way that we created the situation. What is this space where we're saying this? But I don't know Killer Mike like that. But if I were a betting woman, I'd bet that he would smoke a little weed or two, a little bit. I don't know him. Right. But what I'm saying is I could bet that. And so what I'm saying is, it just feels like we're not truly tapping into the power that we have and the presence and that we have began to get here. And that from my perspective, and I'm gonna ask you from yours, I feel that folks are starting to assimilate into the establishment.
Yeah, I think that is true. And I'm really clear that even once you get comfortable in the establishment, there are folks who are committed to bringing you down. You know, Fonnie Willis is very much the establishment. It is harder to get more established than being the DA of Fulton County. And what do we see? Her dragged in and having her personal business dragged through the woods. Right. Mm-hmm, and so I think that we can get comfortable and pretend like, you know, if we live in a gated community and we've reached all the status that we can smoke all the marijuana we want. And you maybe can until you get caught. Because in Georgia, mm-hmm. because we have failed to change the laws, it is still illegal and you will still go to jail. Like your status doesn't protect you from that. And I think that's just really important to name out loud, and that we have enough people who have status, who've gotten comfortable, who should be able to help us begin to move to say, hey, like, this ain't okay. It's not okay. I mean, the same thing. I mean, this has been true about drugs the whole time. White people have been using drugs the same amount we've been using drugs, but who's in jail for drugs?
Mm-hmm. And you know, it was one of the things that I found out just, you know, as a young, naive person who was 22 when I first was I moved in with my ex-fiance back a long time ago, and we lived in this gated community in Delray Beach, Florida. I had come from living in Hollywood, Florida, which is definitely different than Hollywood, California. Yes. And you know, I was in the sex worker chapter of my life, And I knew the spaces that I was policed in, you know, from being a sex worker, from the back pages and calling. I knew that it couldn't just be the clients, but I had to screen it for the police who were policing the activity that I was participating in. But when I met this man and fell, you know, in love with this man and got into this relationship and we moved into the gated community, The only time I saw police is if they was checking to make sure somebody didn't belong into this environment. And as I just saw the other night, have you seen Ava DuVernay's film Cast?
Origin? No, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh my goodness, you're gonna love it. It's so beautiful. Unfortunately, in here in Atlanta, and I'm seeing across the country, it only is playing in a couple theaters for a couple timelines. And it's that type of movie that it does very much shake the table and connects the dots to, we still don't have privilege today to roam freely. And I know personally, part of my privilege, even as before I get into office, because I'm not playing, and I'm not playing no games, and I understand that I have to do a lot of work in order to get the voters to understand who I am and where I'm, you know, where I'm coming from, and make sure I have their confidence. But I got to let them know a lot of things about me, you know. And one of those things is that, you know, I am a partaker in marijuana, and it's for, and I'm going to be using this platform, my all these things, to talk about the medical industry, to talk about what it means to have self-determination, what this decriminalization conversation is all about, but also my own journey to unpack the fact that my diagnosis of general anxiety is also conflated with my ADHD. And when I address my ADHD, I no longer actually have the anxiety that, you know, was compounded, because I'm able to deal with certain things. And so why are we creating a system that criminalizes people for participating and trying to be the leadership in their own healthcare, especially when the healthcare system is failing us?
I'm with you there. I think that most Georgians probably would very much support the legalization of at least medical marijuana. I think that that's really, really popular, and that folks are using, I mean, I talk about it as people having their medication, right? Like, we are arresting people for essentially unprescribed medication, but it is medication that allows people to be able to function every day, that allows them to be able to do the things that they need to do in order to get around. But we continue to pursue a criminalization process. And I get, like, there are people for whom drugs are not helpful. I know people for whom drugs have destroyed their lives, and I'm clear that that's not a crime. It's a medical problem. And we need to support them with that medical problem, not locking them up.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, so that's really where I'm at. And all I'm saying when it comes to this legal system, especially when we know that the scales are tipped in the favor of those who want to enact the power of the system at their will, and so what would you say? I'm a Black trans woman, 43 years old, you know, but also known for my very radical stance on things. What advice could you give someone like me who wants to say, I want to get in there, I want to take on some leadership and run for office?
I'd say do it. I mean, you have, and be who you are. Like, don't try to be somebody else. First of all, that's real stressful. So don't do that. Just be who you are, because there are people, there are voters who yearn to have somebody who represents those ideas, who looks like them or looks like someone they love, who also is willing to say, you know, I don't know what your podcast is rated, so I'll use proper language here.
It's rated whatever you need it to be rated.
But willing to say, buck the system, and I'm going to be who I am, right? I'm gonna push against the social norms, the societal norms, and just be who I am. People are longing for that. And that level of authenticity is so liberating for folks, right? This is why, I mean, I was clear I was going to run as an out queer person, because that's who I am. I've been out for a long time. I wasn't about to go back in nobody's closet. Mm-hmm. And people appreciate it. If I had hit it and then come, like, and run and then come out later, voters would have been like, what?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. They, even my voters who don't agree with the lifestyle, and I say that obviously in air quotes.
Yes. Uh-huh.
They appreciated that I was transparent about it. They appreciated that I was open about it. And that was able to open the conversation. The fact that I wasn't hiding it, that I'm just like, this is who I am. Here are the other issues that I stand for. Here are the things I care about. They really appreciate it. I think people long for authenticity. They long to know that there are people who are willing to be true to who they are. So do it.
Well, I'm working on it, and I'm you know, definitely trying to talk with and kind of learn my community, starting with, you know, I'm in Decatur. I think I might be in your district, in the 41st district. I'm in Decatur, Georgia. And, you know, getting to know folks and really being able to not just be connected, obviously, to the thread of the bigger conversation that sometimes is on our mind, but really what is affecting the everyday person here in Georgia. So before we go, I want to ask you, this podcast is kind of contextualized in a spiritual space. It's called No Opportunity Wasted, because as Buddhists, we believe basically that life is about becoming absolutely happy no matter what your current circumstances are. So to have this not relative happiness based on the sun being up, but to have this absolute happiness. And in order to do so, we also have to find ways that we can win each moment, moment by moment. So that now, how do I win now? How do I make the most out of this opportunity while also being mindful of our own capacity in that moment, and that capacity can change? As a ordained minister, as a public servant, as a person in community, you know, with so much diversity that's here in Georgia, what do you feel is the opportunity or the challenge right now that we need to rise up to as Georgians?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunity in Georgia, actually. There's a lot of opportunity for us to really rally around and support our school systems and to really demand better for all schools, not just some schools, right? That we want to, you know, I think right now we're often fighting to be like, can I get my kid in this charter school, or can I get my kid? How about, can we get our kids in good schools, period, all schools, right? So they can go to the neighborhood schools. I think there's opportunity there. I think there's also just genuine opportunity to give each other a hand up. There are so many folks who have more than they need. We have more than enough. And there are so many people who are just waiting for an opportunity, a second chance, right? Folks who have evictions on their records, who are just like, hey, that's in the past. Can I get a chance, though? Folks who have criminal records, who are ready to work, who want to get licensed and want to be barbers and want to be EMTs, and they just can't get that chance. Folks who just want another opportunity to thrive. And so for those of us who have positions of power, who can give a job, you know, who can give a hand, we need to do that. And I think that Georgia will be better for it if we do that.
Well, thank you so much for just, again, getting into position so that we can have you have your effect that you're having on our society. Thank you for doing the work. And thank you just for your affirmation that I can do this, because I am going to do it, and I'm going to be reaching out to you. We're going to have coffee or something, and consider me also an ally in the work that you're doing. So if there's anything that you need, call me up. I'm here.
All right. I appreciate it. It's really great to spend some time with you here.
Absolutely. Same. All right, okay. We'll be right back, you all. Thank you so much, Kim Jackson, for just doing the work, for showing up, for running, for winning, and for leading, and leading Georgia, and leading us in the right direction. So before we go, I want to drop another Buddhist breadcrumb from the second SGI president, Jose Toda. He taught us that anyone can lament and criticize bad politics and society. We know that things aren't always right, but just throwing shade, that alone doesn't bring the change that we need. It's easy to forget that societies and governments are just made up of people, y'all, like people like you and me. And every one of us moves through different states of being, different emotions and perspectives that shape this world. And if we're aware of this, really aware, we'd realize that changing the world starts with a personal revolution. It starts right here in the human heart. So what I am saying is, without each of us stepping up, evolving, no policy or reform out there is going to truly hit the mark. It'll just be superficial. Let's initiate that human revolution, one person at a time. Start with your inner work, your understanding, your heart, and watch how it transforms the world around you. So, you with me? Let's make it happen for us and for our future. See you next week. I'm your-